activity, and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, April 11th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the show here in the middle of the week. We're going to have ourselves a good time, and if you're not careful, you might learn something before we're done.
Hey.
Welcoming here to the show, we've got Wiz Calico hanging out here on camera, too. How are you doing, Wiz Calico?
Aloha. Doing quite well. Glad to be in here.
I'm going to have to boost you up just a little bit. We got to aim here. Somebody twisted my stuff.
Oh, everybody's been twisting these cameras.
Yeah, I'm messing up my whole show, but you're not Ganja John. You are Wiz Calico. How are you doing today?
Quite well. I'm glad to be here. Feeling very irie.
So we might have to call an audio audible today. Normally we would do the Irie Island Hour tonight at 8 o'clock live, and we still might, because I'm still not sure, but I got this invitation from one of the prominent attorneys here in town to attend a fundraiser dinner meet and greet with Ellen Rosenblum, one of the Democratic candidates for attorney general. I know you're excited about
that. Oh yeah, that was great. SSDP and I went out there and got to see her debate at Willamette Law School against Dwight Holton, who was a former U.S. attorney here in the state. And we're looking forward to her. She's a big supporter of our movement.
So. Yeah, so we hope to get more information and more talk out of her. We'll see if we can get an interview or an endorsement or something. It'll
be
a lot of fun out there. Also joining us here in the studio, we've got Brian the Red hanging out there at the end table. How you doing, Brian?
I always look like a ghost on your whitewash.
I know. The light in this room is terrible. And I tell you, folks,
I'll have to do something about that one of these days.
We are going to fix that someday. I know we get all washed out and can't see what's going on. So we will get that fixed as soon as we can. Also joining us from the virtual studio in Grass Story is our news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I would suggest, similar to a car wash, people coming down into the basement have a spray tan they have to walk through.
There you go. That's right. Cannabis Carrie brings us our hemp headlines after the first break. So what do we have for the news today?
Well, today we're going to talk about that Massachusetts medical marijuana bill to see who's going to pass that, the legislature. They're going to throw that back to the voters. I'll tell you all about that. Plus, San Francisco, they've been under attack lately, it seems like, from the feds, and their mayor has remained silent. He's finally made a statement. I'm going to tell you what he said. And then we've got one of those crime things to report. Senior citizen in Oklahoma was arrested. I'm going to tell you all about that as well, coming up in today's hemp headlines.
All right. That sounds like some news to cover here right after the first break. And also, I've got some news as well to bring to you, but it's all going to come in a radical rant at the end of the show. I'm going to talk about sports and marijuana and drugs. Also, at half past, we got Dr. Mitch joining us for the Cannabis Science segment, taking your live questions on the phone or by our chat room. Stick around. It's all coming up on the Normal Network right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to LFBs.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
This is Normal Show Live.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of Normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The bill seeking to legalize medical marijuana in Massachusetts had a hearing on Tuesday in front of the legislature's Committee on Public Health. Most of the debate on Tuesday centered around the federal government's enforcement of medical marijuana, and they didn't make much headway into whether a legislative compromise might turn this measure into a law. But the other side is lawmakers not agreeing to pass a medical marijuana law in Massachusetts means that the measure will most likely go to the voters to decide come November. Two bills before the Public Health Committee on legalizing medical marijuana, Senate Bill 1161 and House Bill 625, have been sent to a study. Now, that's a legislative move that almost always ends the chances of a bill passing. A co-chair of the committee, Representative Jeffrey Sanchez, said the committee isn't working on anything that would stop the planned ballot question. He did express his concerns on Tuesday in committee that the potential for prosecution by federal authorities is more real than ever, given the recent California raids. If the bill was passed back to the legislature, they would have until May 1st to either pass the initiative as written, draft their own version of the legislation, or just refrain from acting on it, which after Tuesday's debate seems the most likely outcome. Now, that bill will continue its process as a voter initiative and go on towards a November ballot. Backers of the bill would still have to collect an additional 11,485 certified signatures by July 3rd, a process they say would not be a problem. And this is too bad. A little side note to this story, not entirely surprising, though. That big rivalry between U.S. Senator Scott Brown from Massachusetts and the Democratic candidate Elizabeth Warren, who is running for a seat, has already begun making the news. Both candidates have declined to answer a question about whether they support or oppose the medical marijuana bill that will most likely be on the November ballot. On Tuesday, Senator Brown said in response to the question that he wanted to learn more about the actual proposal before he took a position on it. Now, he's a Republican who's in the office now. Elizabeth Warren, the Democratic candidate, said she looked forward to a public hearing on the measure. And even though the question was about legalizing the medical use of cannabis, the Massachusetts Democratic candidate offered that she does oppose outright legalization of marijuana.
Well, Mr. Marsh, it looks like you are in perfect health. Your blood work came back great, and all your vitals appear normal. All right! Yep, you check out fine. That's great. So, can I get a referral from you? For what? Medicinal marijuana. There's a shop that opened in the old KFC, and they said I needed a doctor's referral to buy weed. Mr. Marsh, you don't qualify for medicinal marijuana. But you said I'm totally healthy! Medicinal marijuana is for people who aren't healthy. AIDS patients, cancer patients, you know, people going through chemo. The THC helps them eat and take the pain. You are in fine shape. Well, that sucks.
I don't understand what the intransigence is here by, well, I can understand Scott Brown, perhaps, but Elizabeth Warren not wanting to have a public pronouncement on medical marijuana. In a state like Massachusetts, where they passed decriminalization by a 2-to-1 measure, where they support medical marijuana by about an 80% majority, it seems like a no-brainer that somebody would want to support what is very popular among the people. The only problem is that medical marijuana isn't that popular among the people that really count in this country, the corporate people.
Now, there's been an uneasiness in the Bay Area in California among the patient population, and it feels a bit like the uneasiness that has plagued those in Southern California areas, mainly L.A. County. We've long reported that the Bay Area, specifically Oakland and San Francisco, have had more success in winning over the minds of local politicians. Richard Lee's Oaksterdam University, although had challenges, had been working in harmony with the Oakland City Council for years. That's why the closure of long-operating dispensaries in San Francisco and the raid on Lee's University have come as a big blow to the cannabis activists in Northern California. Now, the San Francisco mayor, Ed Lee, had so far been silent on the raids and the closures that have occurred so far in 2012. Mayor Lee has had no comment on the 5 city-licensed and city-tax-paying dispensaries that have been closed to date, even though activists in the city have been asking for his help. A rally in support of the medical marijuana dispensaries and the cannabis community was held on April 3rd in front of City Hall. Along with concerned citizens, it drew city representatives from the city attorney, the district attorney, and most of the members of the city board of supervisors. But even with an invite, the mayor did not attend. But finally, on Friday, Lee broke his silence on the happenings and released a statement. It was posted on the office of the mayor's website, and in it he expressed his concern for San Francisco's medical marijuana users. He said, quote, "Since 1996, when Proposition 215 first passed, the state of California and our city have reaffirmed many times over our support of a legitimate medicinal use for people with serious illnesses. That's why I'm concerned about the recent federal actions targeting duly permitted medicinal cannabis dispensaries, actions that aim to limit our citizens' ability to have safe access to the medicine they need." Now, he also said, as long as San Francisco's dispensaries and patients are operating within the guidelines set by then Attorney General Jerry Brown in 2008, "I agree with our current Attorney General, Kamala Harris, that raids should not occur. She has said that an overly broad federal enforcement campaign will make it more difficult for legitimate patients to have their access to their physician-recommended medicine in California." Now, that may not be as strong as the statement that activists were looking for, but one of support all the same.
Yeah, it's good to hear the mayor finally coming out and issuing some sort of statement of support for the medical marijuana program. I mean, San Francisco is basically ground zero for medical marijuana in America. Going back to the early 90s, even the late 80s, when the first cannabis buyers clubs were helping out the patients that were suffering from the AIDS and HIV epidemic that took place at that time, that was being ignored by our federal government. I mean, Ronald Reagan didn't even utter the word AIDS until the very end of his term, I believe. But this is great news that we're getting this support from the mayor's office. And I wish we would see more of this, more strong support from other mayors and other leaders at the local level, especially at the state level, in support of their state's medical marijuana programs. The federal government needs to hear this from our elected officials. They need to hear from the responsible lawmakers in the states and the cities that we want medical marijuana. We don't want federal interference. We got this, feds. It's our state. It's our people. It's our neighborhoods. We'll deal with it the way that we see fit. Now, we understand there's federal supremacy and all that, but this is one case where the federal government just needs to back off. It's really no business of the people in Washington, D.C., whether or not the people in San Francisco are given safe access to their medicine. And as always, the one thing I wish I could get through to the opponents of medical marijuana is that shutting down dispensaries and shutting down access doesn't stop people from being sick. It doesn't magically heal anyone. All you do is you take a very desperate, sick, or disabled person and put them at the mercy of the black market. You put them at the mercy of people who may not have compassion as one of their top guiding principles, who'd be fine with just keefing the buds and selling off the shake and the worst parts of the harvest and keeping the good stuff to sell on the black market. That is what you're promoting here. What they need to understand is that the demand will always be there. The patients will always be there. It's just a question of whether or not they're going to be contributing to society, they're going to be regulated by the cities, and they're going to be contributing to the tax base of the location where the medical marijuana is being accessed.
And a retired DHS worker in Oklahoma is being accused of running a large marijuana operation out of her home in Vineta. After a tip to police on a police line that said marijuana was being sold from the home, Craig County investigators began an investigation into the activities of 73-year-old Darlene Mays. They put her under surveillance for 5 months. On Monday evening, they made their move and served a warrant on her home. Around 6:45 p.m., state narcotics agents, along with the Veneta Police and Craig County deputies, raided Mrs. May's scenic farm in Oklahoma. Agents found 6 pounds of marijuana, all packaged up for sale, a few guns, and a pile of cash. The senior citizen had $277,000 in cash stashed in places around her home, much of it in plain sight. They believe that Mays was supplying marijuana to people in Veneta and the nearby Tulsa City as well. County Sheriff Jimmy Suter optimistically told reporters, quote, "We think we really put a big dent in the drug trade in northeastern Oklahoma." He also said that geographically speaking, they are right on the corner with Arkansas, Missouri, and Kansas close by. He said, again, here's a great quote from him, "We feel like it was coming in from all over, and we think this was a really, really good arrest," unquote. The money seized will be divided between the Craig County Sheriff's Office, Veneta Police Department, and Craig County District Attorney's Office. The police say they are putting their share of the money right into more drug interdiction programs and equipment, along with sending police to get schooling on drug enforcement. Darlene Mays faces a total of 5 criminal charges: possession of marijuana with intent to distribute, maintaining a dwelling where drugs are kept or sold, possession of a firearm in commission of a felony, and failure to affix tax stamps. Authorities say they may have more arrests since this investigation is ongoing. Russ, she really should have gotten those tax stamps.
Oh, yeah. Got to get those tax stamps, man. I hope we all feel a lot safer that this 73-year-old criminal mastermind has been put out of commission here. Jeez. What other sort of crime do you ever hear of people in their 70s or even sometimes their 80s being involved with? I mean, this kind of goes to show that it's not exactly the most dangerous, you know, crazy thing in the world to try to take on. I mean, and especially when you're dealing with folks that are, you know, in their 70s, in their 80s, you know, what else are they going to do for a living? They're not going to go out and, I guess, they could be greeters at Walmart. I guess that's the choice here. Now, this is a situation that, once again, is possible because of prohibition. I don't think it's a bad thing that the 73-year-old was helping people, you know, get weed and was making money on weed. I don't got a problem with that at all. I wish, though, that it was legal so that she could continue to do that, so she could run a boutique or a store or a delivery service or something like that. There are so many opportunities. There's such a great economy involved here in marijuana that it's just a shame that we continue to turn it into warehousing people. Here, arresting someone who's 73-year-old, what are we going to do with her? Put her in a cage for the rest of her natural life? I mean, is that going to make us any better as a society? Let's put these people to work for our society. Let's put this economy to work for our society by taxing and regulating it, by creating jobs for these people that could use the jobs in our society, by making a world where this money doesn't go to the buying the Xbox or a video game for some dealer, that it actually helps to fund a school or, you know, a food program for the needy, or, you know, how housing assistance, something that would be a greater benefit than what we're doing now, which is just continuing to fund and fuel this prison industrial complex. It's got to end, and it can't end soon enough. All right, Carrie, thanks for that news. And I also wanted to bring up this interesting little tidbit coming from the Dutch news service in the Netherlands. Pollen thought to come from a marijuana plant has been found in a grave in Gelderland dating back 4,200 years. As well as what is thought to be cannabis sativa, the grave contained meadowsweet. Both plants have medicinal and pain-relieving properties, leading archaeologists to believe that the person in the grave may have been ill. The grave itself was lined with wooden planks and, given the amount of meadowsweet traces, the dead person may have been laying on a mat of the flowering plant, the archaeologist said. So there we go. Dutch medical marijuana dating back 4,200 years. Well, obviously, this Bronze Age Dutchman did not realize that marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance with absolutely no medicinal properties. How many more years of safe use do we got to give them? Before we leave you, I wanted to remind you about our WePay donation page that we've got going up at stash.normal.org. We have crested 80%. We're over $3,400. We're trying to raise $4,200 by 4/20. So that means we've only got 9 days left. You can visit our site at wepay.com/donate/NSL, or you can go to our blog at stash.normal.org. And every bit of money that you donate to that fund goes to pay off the expenses for us to travel to Denver, Denver and Tucson and Dallas and Los Angeles and all the different places we're going to go, San Francisco this year, to bring you live events right here at live.normal.org. So visit our blog, stash.normal.org. Contribute today.
All right, you know what that sound means. I think it's time that we take a break.
I think it's time we take a break and see if we can find ourselves some 4,200-year-old medical marijuana.
Or
maybe 42 minutes old.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
What's up, guys? This is Ms. High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, instead of talking to Kyle, a.k.a. NorCal Perps, today, we throw things over to Wiz Calico, who's going to handle this Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad stuff.
That's right. My boys from the Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad, if you guys are fans of the Irie Island Hour, you may have heard them before. They're from Rochester, New York. They're a psychedelic reggae group, which is awesome, and they just last year put out a country album. That's where you may have heard them. We've played some country music, and it's, you know, a lot of banjos, a lot of mandolins, and you know, they put that album out. But they're typically more of a psychedelic reggae group, and so they just recently released a brand new album, just came out yesterday, April the 10th, entitled "In These Times," and that's on Controlled Substances Sound Labs, which is the same. Same label that has signed Slightly Stupid, The Expendables, and a bunch of other artists that we listen to here on the Normal Network. And, you know, Curtis from Herbivore Publicity, the guy that does all their PR, it's been really awesome to us, is also the guy that does the work for The Green. So we wanted to make sure that they got their proper shout-outs on an Irie Wednesday and wanted to preview this song, which is the lead song off of their new album, In These Times, which you guys can find at GiantPandaDub.com, GiantPandaDub.com, or EasyStar.com. This is In These Times by the Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad.
What was that, Calico?
Oh, yeah, by the way, it's called Change You, okay. Not In These Times. That's the album cover. Appreciate it.
Right back after this.
Goodness will
Sure to plug that the Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad is going to be at Incredibles Extravaganza, which will be there in Denver for the same time as the High Times Cannabis Cup. So be sure to check them out, 420 weekend in Denver. And on GiantPandaDub.com.
Alternative Medical Choices offers healthcare the way it should be. Easy to access, patient-centered, team-based, and quality-focused. We offer a variety of natural, affordable healthcare treatment options like primary care, group acupuncture, massage, and assistance with OMMP registration. As a patient, you will have a team of experts working with you to make you the best you can be. Call Alternative Medical Choices at 503-288-5579 or check us out on the web at altmedchoices.com.
Warning, Neil deGrasse Tyson may grab you off the street at any minute.
I know that the molecules in my body are traceable to phenomena in the cosmos. That makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
This is Normal Show Live.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. At Normal, we've been prepping for this debate for 40 years.
On Sunday mornings when I'm asleep in my dorm room, my parents are busy recording the Libra Lounge. But I always catch the replay here on the Normal Network. Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. following Danny Danko's Free Weed.
Bitches have something to say.
Oh, she's brilliant.
The Libra Lounge.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, folks, let's get right to it. Dr. Mitch is waiting on the line, and he's a pro and ready to go. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
All right, me too. As we get started here, I wanted to open up with the newest studies. We always like to give people the cannabis science right at the beginning here. I've got one that Paul Armentano put up on baby wash products and false positives for THC. I was hoping you could address that and maybe any other studies you could tell us about.
As it turns out, that one's a pretty haunting one. So one of the commonly used baby wash soaps can actually create the illusion that either the baby's urine or your urine has been exposed to cannabis. And they didn't really go crazy with this in the way I thought. I thought they'd you know, throw a ton of the soap in with the urine and something like that. It was not heavy-duty use of the soap that was enough to actually make it test positive. And they actually used a fairly conservative cutoff for what would qualify as a THC positive urine screen as well. So this is pretty haunting. Mm-hmm. Now, they did test a whole bunch of different products, and not all of them were this way, but the fact that this exists is really spooky, particularly given that there are states where people can essentially be charged with child endangerment if something like this showed up.
Yeah, and from what I read on this, this is the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and they came about doing this study because they had suspected, they were getting all these positive readings, and these mothers that were protesting, you know, no, there's no way, I've never smoked pot, and had pretty good, you know, alibis to back them up on it as far as other testing and follow-ups go. And so the researchers were like, well, geez, what could be causing these babies to come up positive? And, you know, it was pretty insightful of them to think about the baby wash products. Is that the way sometimes these studies come about, is just kind of happenstance like this?
And I'm grateful that they were willing to take that route rather than immediately, you know, run down to some neighborhood and try to bust everybody.
Yeah.
But in fact, the way we discovered fetal catenuria, basically this problem with some folks who can't metabolize phenylalanine, was one of the nurses said, hey, these diapers smell different on these kids.
Hmm.
And suddenly everybody, you know, got into that and realized it in a way where they would have been sort of lumped in with other folks with mental retardation problems. Instead, they discovered this unique quality and we, you know, discovered a way to keep that to a minimum. So, no, I'm always delighted to see work like that.
All right. With regard to that, are they talking about these baby washes being absorbed by the baby's skin and then going through the baby's urine, or is it a contamination thing where they might just come in contact with each other?
So they actually put the baby wash in what's basically like a baby wipe and a diaper-type product, and then the urine was in with that. And so that was how it was exposed, and I mean, it was a relatively high dose under those circumstances, but you know, the possibility of that is definitely not zero, and
sure,
it seemed to be making, you know, having an impact at this particular location. So I think that that's you know, a reasonable way to do the test.
All right, we're also taking calls from the live audience right now at 971-533-7111, or you can get them through our chat line at live.normal.org, where we get our first question from an anonymous Ustreamer who wants to know, what's the best thing to say when someone tells you they have a friend who used to be normal, but then they started smoking weed, and now they're all messed up because of it? How do you respond to something like that?
It's interesting because I can't help but ask, do you know anyone who's messed up who doesn't smoke weed?
Mm-hmm. There we go. You know, it's always, it's a case-by-case basis, too. I mean, you'd have to know who's the person, who are they talking about, what's going on in their lives. I find in talking to people that a lot of times their smoking of marijuana is a reaction to something bad happening, not something bad happening because they're smoking marijuana.
And in fact, particularly in, you know, teens who are showing a lot of problems, it's often undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder or clinical depression, and it's more often self-medication than cannabis causing the troubles. And I really resent these people whose tacit assumption is that this, you know, this person would be Jonas Salk and now discovering wonderful cures for cancer while they're zooming to the moon, when in fact odds are high this is, you know, this is a person who's got some genuine troubles and might need some help, but cannabis is hardly the source of those troubles.
Yeah, I actually had one of those people during the whole Michael Phelps thing saying that, well, imagine how great he would have been if he hadn't been smoking weed. It's like, yeah, he would have gotten 8 out of 8 world records instead of 6. Jeez, I mean, what more do you want from the guy?
But also, he probably would have been so stressed out, he would have cracked and quit swimming.
Yeah, very well could have been. I mean, that's a real monotonous lifestyle, and it, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I imagine marijuana can help with that a lot. We're going to talk more about sports and marijuana here at the end of the show, too, in the Radical Rant, so stay tuned for that. More questions coming in from the chat room. A DFW deputy from Dallas-Fort Worth wants to know, do you think Latin America will beat us to legalization?
All I can say is I hope they get to it soon. It is insane and dangerous down there. I just had a colleague come back from Mexico City, and he was headed out to go for a jog in the morning, and they stopped him at the hotel and said, don't go out right now. You won't come back.
Wow.
I mean, it's that bad. And I feel like it's clearly going to require some drastic change, and legalization would be the first step. I think if the government could actually get control of the drug markets down there, it would be superb. And I would hate to think that the United States would have to wait until things are that bad up here in order to make comparable changes.
Yeah. And in fact, there are already some decriminalization moves that have been made in some Latin American countries. At least in South America, I know Argentina has gone a long way in its decriminalization. I know there's a few other countries as well. We'd have to ask Ethan Nadelman for the rundown because I don't remember them all off the top of my head.
And their ideas about enforcement are nowhere near as hard ass, shall we say, as some of the towns around here.
All right. We're going to go right here to the live studio. Our own Wiz Calico has a question for you, Dr. Mitch.
Hey, Dr. Mitch, I have a friend who swears that he does not dream when he smokes cannabis. And so he talks about how he needs to quit because he doesn't dream anymore. I'm just curious, what is the effect of cannabis on dreaming?
We do see suppressed REM sleep with repeated exposure to THC. So that stage of the sleep where dreams are most likely does seem to be suppressed. And I do recommend not hitting it every night. And I know when you're battling insomnia, it's hard to not hit it one night. But definitely keep your dosage low, and then, you know, take nights off. And it's amazing how delightful it is to get those dreams back. And I really encourage it in part because you do see some REM rebound if you go a long time without abstaining in the night. So then you finally take a night off, and it's like you have all your dreams at once, and suddenly, you know, giant rocket ships are flying in yellow submarines, and, you know, monsters are jumping out and everything else, because it's like you're having a week's worth of dreams all on a single night. So by all means, taking nights off, it's really worth it.
You know, that's interesting, because I took a night off last night I just didn't happen to, because I smoked pretty early in the night and then ended up passing out and then woke up and went back to sleep for real. And then I had pretty intense dreams. And I got to say, it was the first time that I do vividly remember dreams. And I was like in a cold sweat last night, and I just haven't had that in a while. So maybe if that is the effect, maybe I'll keep smoking before I go to bed. Because it was not that comfortable.
It's not pleasant.
In fact, Alan Budney, he calls that a symptom of marijuana withdrawal.
Oh, well, there you go.
I mean, you say that to a heroin addict and you'll get punched in the face. But, you know, clearly this is what categorizes you as obviously dependent.
Well, there we go.
All right. Well, there we go.
Makes sense.
I guess the solution is to just keep smoking there, Calico.
Oh, there we go.
We got you taken care of. All right. We've taken questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine here live during the 4 o'clock Pacific hour, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. The phone number here is 971-533-7111. But if you don't get your question in on the show, or if you're shy, or you can't log into the chat, or whatever it might be, you can always send your question in by email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And we'll get that question right to Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Uh-oh. That sound means we're going to go off the rails a little bit. Dr. Mitch, I've started this new thing. where we attack a subject that has nothing to do with marijuana, although I'm going to give it a slight marijuana hook. For a long time, I was a Red Cross blood donor. I figured it's the laziest way that I can help others. I just sit in a chair and bleed. And throughout the entire screening processes, whenever I went through Red Cross, it was never a problem because they don't have an issue with cannabis use. I was very honest about it. You know, I use cannabis every day. They're like, I don't care about that. And then they asked about all the other, you know, prescriptions or whatever. But one of the things that always bothered me about this is that they don't allow gay men to donate blood, even, you know, regardless of HIV status or anything like that. Just if you admit to being gay or having sex with a man, you can't donate. And they don't make that restriction on women, I understand. It's just gay men. So I'm wondering if you can address that, Dr. Mitch, and give us an idea of what's going on with the Red Cross. Why do they have this standard, and what, if anything, can we do about it?
So I find this egregiously unethical, and I think that they could actually use that blood to gather incredibly important data if they were just willing to do so. If you could imagine a situation where, in fact, we'd have sexual orientation or at least sexual experience as part of the data set for where this blood came from, first of all, we could dispute this ridiculous idea that all gay men have HIV, which is absolutely insane, retarded, horrible stereotype. But we could also, if we do find blood that does have HIV exposure, imagine that as a wonderful resource for subsequent research. Right now, you know, folks doing some of the simian AIDS research, folks doing HIV research with human blood, they're really struggling to get, you know, enough of a sample and enough of a diverse sample to really do the kind of work they need. They could make incredible use of that data. If all I had was literally just a questionnaire that I would, you know, fill out anonymously and staple it and toss it in with the blood that I donate, and they would just separate that out and use it for other purposes.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this more in Hour 2 in Toker Talk Radio. Cannabis Carrie has been doing some research on this, and she actually called the National Red Cross today and talked to them about this issue. Carrie, anything else you want to tease for this segment coming up here in Hour 2 about this Red Cross stuff?
Well, I went and donated blood today, and I had a good conversation with them. I just want to say that the Red Cross, the National Red Cross, and it says on their website, they don't have authority over the blood donation guidelines that is set by the FDA. Mm. And they say when the FDA changes their guidelines, that they will most likely change theirs. And I can also tell you that it's been up for debate in 1997. In 2003, like, a bunch of congressmen wrote, and they went up, and as recently as last June, they went up to review it again. They changed the eligibility. For example, people that had tattoos, you used to not be able to give blood if you had a tattoo at all. Hmm. Then you had to wait a year after a tattoo. They've changed that now to 6 months. So this is the one thing that they have not changed. Every year it comes up for review. It sounds very homophobic to me as well. They say that if you're a gay man, you've ever had sex with a man after 1977, lifetime ban.
Yeah. That's just insane, Dr. Mitch, and we're going to take a look at that more in Hour 2 as well, because I think it also can be a dangerous, you know, it sets kind of a dangerous mindset in that people going in to give blood, if they think about this, they might think, well, wait, why do they have to keep all the gay guys out? Because of AIDS? Wait, does that mean they can't test AIDS in the blood? I mean, isn't that what it kind of suggests?
And I mean, the latent homophobia or flagrant homophobia, depending on how you look at it, is just so unjustified. I mean, the base rates of HIV are nowhere near what you would expect if you were clearly turning away every guy who'd ever had sex with a man.
That's just
outrageous.
It was always tough for me. I always hated seeing that question, and I questioned whether or not, you know, ethically, you know, should I be doing this, supporting some organization that feels this way? But like Carrie says, it sounds like it's the FDA that we need to get our attention to, and not necessarily the Red Cross.
And as hard up as we are for blood, I mean, this is just a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad we got to talk about that a little bit, Dr. Mitch, because, you know, it's not always just about marijuana here, but I do encourage marijuana consumers, the cannabis community out there, to give blood, because you can, as a cannabis consumer. They don't have a problem with that. So let's help everybody we can. Dr. Mitch joins us every Wednesday here for the Cannabis Science segment. Thanks so much, Dr. Mitch, for being here.
Thank you.
All right, 420research@gmail.com if you want to send him an email. We're back with Sports and Weed right after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Ph.D.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks. Today, I wanted to rant a little bit about this craze lately in the sports world to go after marijuana. Now, the latest stories, you know, Carrie's brought these to us in the news, mostly involve the Detroit Lions. I don't know what it is with the Detroit Lions, but three of them have been busted. One guy's been busted twice, and that became one of our stories that we talked about here. And we've also seen it in Major League Baseball, of course, the case of Tim Lincecum, the Cy Young Award winner. We've seen it in mixed martial arts as well. And I've got a few stories, kind of a grab bag of sports and marijuana stories that I wanted to bring up. But I wanted to start my curiosity was piqued about this. My interest was piqued about this when I saw this video that someone turned into me today. I got it through my Twitter feed. Let me share this with you. This was recently at the Toronto Blue Jays Major League Baseball game when somebody showed up to the game dressed as a marijuana leaf. It's a nice costume, I have to admit. Big old puffy green leaf with heavy-lidded bloodshot eyes. Looks like he's carrying around like a fake bong or something. Very cartoon looking. It kind of has white gloves like Mickey Mouse gloves on or something. But there they are, the staff of the Toronto Blue Jays security leading out this costumed character representing marijuana. Awful, terrible. We just can't have drug references. Just can't have drug references around the children. I really wish people would get this straight. That we're talking about a baseball game. Mom, baseball, apple pie. It's as American as apple pie, they always say. And here somebody shows up representing drugs in one of our Major League Baseball stadiums. I just could not believe that. In fact, I was so shocked and dismayed by this that I had to find another video of something more wholesome, something more American, something traditional, and something that just exudes baseball. That's right, the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Miller Park. This is the home of the Miller Brewing Company's Milwaukee Brewers, Miller Park, the major brewer. And the team is actually named the Brewers. It's actually named after drug manufacturers. We have an entire team dedicated to drug manufacturing. This is the inside here of Miller Park, a very beautiful Major League Modern Baseball stadium. There's a little slide up there in the corner, if you can see that. That's sponsored by another alcohol kind of thing. I can't quite make it out there. For some time, they had kind of the big brewery thing in the middle of the field. I think that's changed a little bit now, but yeah, this is all okay. Brewers, Klamath beer, and so forth. That's all great. We can have that kind of drugs in our Major League Baseball stadiums. We just can't have the marijuana leaf running around in the Major League Baseball stadiums. That, of course, is the major problem here. So, of course, obviously, tongue-in-cheek here, calling out the hypocrisy of Major League Baseball here. And when we get into other sports, you know, I want to talk about this Detroit Lions thing and the pain that these players go through. The NFL wants to go after these players for using marijuana, and it's obviously because of the whole family-friendly thing and the drug thing, and it's illegal and all of that. But if we put that aside for a minute, we just think about the health and well-being of these players. Marijuana ought to be mandatory in the NFL. There ought to be bongs and vaporizers on the sidelines. And first of all, let's not even get into the whole New Orleans Saints situation where they were paying bounties for players to go headhunting to take out ACLs and stuff like that, to the point where the NFL had to suspend the head coach for a year, right? I don't even go that far. But just with respect to the sport itself, the amount of painkillers that these guys are given is just astounding. I looked this up from a report that was out last year coming from the from ESPN. And this was they did a major expose on this. A study commissioned by ESPN and assisted by the National Institute on Drug Abuse shows that retired NFL players misuse painkillers at a rate of 4-1 compared to the general public. Miami Dolphins tight end Dan Johnson's teammates called him King of Pain because of the myriad injuries he suffered throughout his career from 1983 to 1987. He became addicted to painkillers after two back surgeries. Quote, "I was taking about 1,000 Vicodins a month," he told ESPN. People go, "That's impossible. That's crazy." No. It's exactly what I was taking. I mean, believe me, I'd love to be off medications. That's my worry every day, to make sure I have medication. More than half of the surveyed former players reported using prescription painkillers during their playing days. Of that same group, 71% admitted misusing the drugs during their time in the NFL. So we're really concerned about whether a player from the Detroit Lions got busted with a blunt. And meanwhile, these guys are doing up to 1,000 Vicodin a month? Really? But for some reason, we don't have the same zeal to want to crack down on these guys. For some reason, in the NFL, there's this reluctance to want to come down on the prescription drug abuse that's going on. And for some reason, I just can't put my finger on what that might be. Oh, yes, I remember. Pharmaceutical advertising.
When you're a quarterback in the NFL, there are no sick days. Vicks DayQuil defeats five cold and flu symptoms. In the NFL, you can't win tomorrow if a cold keeps you up tonight. Vicks NyQuil cold and flu. The nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine.
Yes, that might be part of the reason why the NFL doesn't want to crack down too hard on these prescription drug companies and all the painkillers they're abusing. And folks, this is in the headlines all the time. Kalika was just reminding me, what's that story with Ryan Leaf out in Montana?
Ryan Leaf was arrested twice in the same weekend, for burglarizing a house trying to get OxyContin.
Yeah, that's how bad these guys get addicted to this stuff. And yet we want to have a big concern, a big worry over whether or not they're using marijuana. That just seems so insane to me. Now, I'm not saying that they should be necessarily promoting it. I mean, I said that tongue in cheek, you know, it ought to be mandatory. But, you know, obviously it's an illegal drug. They can't be promoting it. And if a guy gets busted with it, I can see why that's a PR problem. But punishing these guys, trying to push them into using something that's more dangerous and not cracking down on this abuse of prescription painkillers that are truly harmful to the long-term health and safety of these players, it's just insane to me. But again, it kind of shows how the NFL just goes through these players, you know, other than the big superstars, most of them, you know, lead lives of, you never hear them again. They don't make a whole ton of money. They end up crippled by their 50s. So, you know, they need to pay a little bit more attention to this. I'd like a little less pink ribbons and pink stuff all over the uniforms when breast cancer awareness comes out. And how about a little more attention to this prescription painkiller problems that we have in the NFL? Now, to continue the whole sports and marijuana thing, I also wanted to bring up some stories because another area where marijuana use has been cracked down upon in sports has to do with the mixed martial arts and boxing. And this is a story that's just coming up from Sports Illustrated. The California State Athletic Commission voted on Monday to approve a amendment that allows for the therapeutic use exemptions for combat sports athletes who use drugs that are currently banned by the state agency as long as they're using them for medical purposes, including testosterone and marijuana. To be adopted into state law, the amendment's verbiage must now be reviewed and approved by the Department of Consumer Affairs and then the state's Office of Administrative Law, a process that could take months or even years if it passes at all. This is loosely modeled after the exemption process the World Anti-Doping Agency uses for Olympians. The amendment states that the exemption will only apply to, quote, medication needed to maintain health and not obtain an unfair advantage over an opponent during a match, end quote. Now, again, most of this is dealing with the detection of testosterone in mixed martial arts fighters, namely one UFC middleweight, Dan Henderson, who tested positive for the banned substance when he fought Mauricio Shogun Hua, but he was given a therapeutic use exemption for that testosterone. However, the exemption with proper medical documentation would also be applied to medical marijuana, and this would be great news to fighters Nick Diaz and Toby Tigerheart Greer, a good friend of the show, who have both gone rounds with the Athletic Commission over their medical marijuana use. And you know what I always say, you know, if you're willing to get into a cage with a well-trained human being whose sole purpose is to punch you into unconsciousness or break your joints to the point of pain and submission, then we really ought not to be worrying whether or not they're smoking weed to get over that. That would seem kind of obvious to me. But this crusade against marijuana in pro sports, again, I think we can certainly point the finger at where it's coming from. It's coming from this intertwining, this reliance on the advertising revenue that comes from pharmaceutical companies and comes from alcohol companies.
Knock heartburn into a whole new zip code. 24/7 satisfaction guaranteed. Prilosec OTC. Heartburn gone, power on.
These are
the official heartburn remedy sponsor of the NFL.
The official heartburn remedy sponsor of the NFL. Go to the tailgate, drink all the beer, have the ribs, have all the crappy food. And when you get the heartburn, we've got the Prilosec OTC for you, the official heartburn sponsor of National Football League. It just seems so obvious when you look at it this way. And for one more commercial break, I wanted to bring up this one, you know, talking about sports, marijuana, and weed. This is the one that played on the Super Bowl. And for most of us in the community, it almost feels like they're trying to say something here. Let's see if you enjoy this one. Prohibition is over. The war ends. Yes, it's that Budweiser ad where they show all these great events throughout American history. The 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the moon launch. And Budweiser is always there. This is how deeply into our culture the use of drugs has become embedded. As long as those drugs are liquid and produced by a major American corporation. Actually, international corporation now. Anheuser-Busch is owned by InBev. But there's big money there in alcohol promotion, and that big money helps to fund the NFL and those huge stadiums. So it's no surprise they want no competition from marijuana. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. They're even using our language. Grab some buds. Live the high life. It couldn't be more clear if we spelled it out for you. Just as long as there's a company out there that can make some money off of it. Just as long as it's not you growing a plant in the backyard on your own, having a little fun, watching the game, and not contributing to some company's bottom line. That's why sports doesn't like marijuana, people. All right, we're going to take this into hour two. We got all sorts of interesting things in hour two. A new movie trailer from Seth MacFarlane. We've got Drunk Bohemian Rhapsody. You're going to love this one. And Sarah Frank from Moms for Marijuana joins us with news of a victory over WePay.com's refusal to process Moms for Marijuana. So very interesting financial news coming up in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. You can learn more at radicalrust.podbean.com to subscribe to TTR. For Cannabis Carry, Wiz Kaliko, and Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for Hour 1. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
You're listening to the Normal Network.